Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Friday Special, a podcast by Guitar Nerds. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Mark Packham.
Hello there.
And our special guest for this episode, Ben Adrian, the lead sound designer at Line 6 and Ampeg. Hello, Ben.
Greetings from California.
Yes, absolutely. California is the best place for us to do these trans-country time difference things, because it means that you can do it on your lunchtime and we get to do it in our evening, which is perfect for us. But yes, thank you very much for coming on this episode of the Friday Special. Now I guess for listeners, if you don't know Ben Adrian, which you should, it's Ben Adrian's job at Line 6 to analyze amplifiers and effects and other studio hardware in order to create digital replications for use in Line 6 products for things like the Helix. And I guess to intro you to everyone, Ben, you joined Line 6 just after the Pod HD 500, so just in time to start working on all the Helix stuff from the get-go.
Yeah, so I joined Line 6 about 8.5 years ago. So HD 500 was out. I think DT25 had just released the amp. And then, so I started and they were just like, okay, you're going to do amp modeling. And there was going to be expansion packs for the HD 500, much like there were for Pod XT.
Right. Because there was plenty of DSP limitation on those as well.
Yeah, so there were going to be expansion packs, and I came in and started doing amp modeling, and then behind the scenes, it was like, okay, we're going to just try to make a more high-end modeler, because, you know, other companies had come around and shown that people would pay $1,500 or more for an amp modeler, so...
I guess 8 years ago was around that time, wasn't it, when it had gone from being, you know, the pod, from it being sort of like an affordable thing for people with who didn't have home studios to go for as an alternative to buying sort of 20 amps and 50 pedals. That around 8 years ago was the first time it actually became kind of a legitimate professional thing.
Yeah, it was.
You're doing the Pod series a disservice there, Joe. I think even going back to the Pod Pro, you know, the rack mount solutions have been used in professional situations, I guess, but it's these things are always evolving. I suspect how that's kind of how it's seen from your side, Ben.
Well, what, you know, when people are doing, developing these products, the managers who sit upstairs, you know, there's always like a price point, like, okay, we want to hit this price point to capture this market segment. And up until before Helix, it was always like, price was a concern. So there's always going to be some design limitations because we had to hit kind of a rough price range. And with Helix, we kind of were able to throw that a little more out the window because we knew we were designing something that was going to be $1,500, when it was originally released.
Yeah, I guess so. So I guess you came in with kind of at the first time when you almost had no budget to just create the perfect product for this sort of thing.
Yeah, when I was doing the amp modeling, at first I had to work within the limitations of what was going to be an HD 500, and then quickly it was like, oh, we're doing this thing, you know, and I kind of was, a couple people left the company and I was kind of left to my own devices, and I kind of reinvented how the procedures for the modeling the amps were done. And I knew that I didn't have to worry about any kind of DSP limitations. I might have to come back and reduce some DSP for this new one, but I kind of got to go, you know, full on and just do whatever I wanted and try crazy experiments. And yeah, it was great.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's a wonderful position to be in. And of course, the I guess with Line 6 and with the Helix, there was such an interesting way of actually modeling amplifiers, because modeling effects as well, because you're dealing with individual things. You're not, you know, for example, modeling an AC30 as an AC30 or a Boss VB2 or whatever. There, you're modeling specific pedals or amplifiers.
I'll just kind of talk about it. Yeah, we kind of get a little more, you know, a little more fine-tuned with every part. It's, you know, we're not really like saying, oh, there's a carbon comp resistor, so that's going to make the circuit behave a certain way. It's more like, oh, I'm able to listen to just the first gain stage of an amp, and then I model just that little first gain stage of an amp and all of its distortions, and I can kind of break the amp down into smaller little pieces, each one of them that, you know, changes the sound a little bit. And so we're able to go in and do, every amp model might be like actually 20 or 30 sub models of how the sound has changed. So it behaves as an entire system, not just you put in X, you get out Y.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So I guess it's a case of kind of, you're modeling everything, kind of in its, so you're playing the real amplifier and looking at it in its most extreme form and in its simplest form, and then building everything kind of based on that. I'm not sure if that makes any sense.
I think the best way to put it is, like, if you think about designing, let's say, an analog audio circuit, you know, a distortion pedal, you might say, okay, I need to make the signal louder, and then I need to find a way to distort that signal, whether it's diodes or overloading a transistor. I need to be able to adjust the tone, and I need to be able to adjust the output volume. So it's like a simple distortion pedal. So you send an audio signal through an analog circuit, and every few components, the sound changes. When I'm making a model, I'm looking at, okay, how do I do that exact same procedure, except the signal is just getting converted to a digital signal first, but then there's all the things where it's like, okay, I can make the volume louder. I can add distortion with a certain characteristic. I can, you know, adjust the tone like a tone knob would adjust it, and I can adjust the output volume. So it really is like an analogous to the actual pedal, like with the way the signal changes the same way at the same points in the virtual circuit as it does in the, you know, real life circuit.
Right.
Do you have kind of stock pieces of code for that? For example, like the way that a pedal builder would, you know, have racks of parts on the shelf that they can pull from. Do you have bits that you just drop in and then tweak from there?
There's a set of tools that were written by software engineers here. You know, we have many super smart DSP engineers, but they don't come from like the analog audio world. They come from more of the digital world. So they don't really know the ins and outs of analog audio gear, but they're able to make like tube simulators, EQ filters, things that control like virtual DC in the amps, so you get bias shifts and stuff. And yeah, so I'm able to put in like, okay, here's a tube simulator. But then once that's in there, I have to go in and set all the details within that like DSP block, the amount of gain, how it distorts, you know, how the harmonics line up in there. It's just, there's all the things I adjust behind the scenes, but there are kind of like starting points where we can start, but everything is done manually and by hand. I wish there was a way to like automate more of this, because it would take us a lot less time to do amp models.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, because line the Helix especially, I mean, I don't know if it actually does, but it feels to me like it has more available amp models than most of the competition. Like, that seems to be what Line 6 have gone for with the Helix. It's like, here is a load of stuff, whereas, you know, things like the Boss GT1000 might be like, here's a clean amp and this is a American sounding amp. You know, on the Helix there will be, you know, there'll be 20 different types of like Fender clean amp, you know, ranging through all the different ones you can think of. It seemed to be that that seems to be quite a labor intensive part of your job then, the amount of amps that you've modeled.
Oh yeah. No, it's definitely something that takes a lot of time, you know, and there was like, you know, maybe a year and a half or 2 years of us just modeling amps for Helix before it was like a physical product that we could even play internally. So it's one of those things where it's very time consuming, and but I think the people who came up with the concept, they want to, you know, make it a living platform where there's going to be updates that have more models and there's going to be new features added. So it was always part of the plan. When it came out, there was something like 30 amps, and now there's, I don't know, 60.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There are so many now, and the thing is, you know, it's wonderful. Like as a Helix owner, that's a fantastic thing. Is that every now and again there'll just be an update, and it's you know, it's like a Christmas present. Oh, it's like, oh, here's another 5 pedals and 4 amps that I didn't have before that I now have access to. I guess it's a fantastic thing to have I guess tapped into. Unlike some of the other modelers, that there's just so many constant updates of all these new wonderful things based on often, you know, very revered and sought after things on the market.
Yeah, we change, you know, there's kind of an internal list, and then we'll do a couple models and we'll go back and look at the list and see what it seems like is the new hotness or some trends that everyone wants, or, oh, someone likes this. Or sometimes it's just something like, oh, hey, I really like this thing, or I have a crazy idea for a delay, let me just do that. But you know, we kind of listen to what people seem to want and push that to the front of the list when we can.
Yeah, and certainly when Ampeg came into the fold, there was a huge increase in you got the scrambler pedal, I think, on there, and then there were a handful of extra Ampeg presets added to the Helix as well.
Yeah, it was definitely like, okay, hey, we have Ampeg now. It was kind of like a bass-heavy update one time where it's like we threw in this Ampeg amp and a couple Ampeg pedals, and we can actually use the name Ampeg in the modeler now. So it's, you know, it's actually the Ampeg SVT4 Pro instead of...
Yeah, what was it before?
That was new. We did that one when it was...
Oh, no, yes, the 4 Pro was the new one. Yeah, I can't remember what the
SV
name was.
SV Beast was the
That SVT. Was the SV Beast.
I don't know if we've changed it yet. We talked about changing it to actually the real amp name, but we might just leave it the old one because all the amp names are kind of in jokes. Everyone, I don't know if people think it's really serious, but all the amp model names we're just kind of like throwing in jokes, and sometimes they're in jokes. Sometimes it's just like we're just sick of dealing with crap and we have to name it something.
Right. Yeah, this seems to be something that's kind of taken off across the world of modeling amps, is that when you have to model something that's based on something else, there'll be a creative play on words to explain to people what that is without crossing any legal lines.
That's kind of always been the way with Line 6, though. I remember the manuals back when, you know, for example, when the DL4 came out, the manuals always had kind of references to stuff and jokey ways around it. I've always kind of thought that has been one of Line 6's strengths when doing the modeling stuff, is the way that you tell the story. Again, going back to those manuals, you know, the kind of image that came across was, look, we've got this giant warehouse of all the real gear, so we've got access to it to be able to model it better than anyone else. This isn't just a generic, here's your clean amp. It is, you know, based on this year twin or whatever it is, you know.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, if there's... You know, I feel like some people see Line 6 and they have always thought, oh, it's probably just a bunch of like computer scientists and you know, digital audio nerds trying to make guitar gear. And especially ever since I've been here, like I came, you know, I was a recording engineer. I built my own analog pedals. I did amp repair. I worked, you know, I did mastering. So I kind of come from the world of audio and especially analog circuits. So I kind of wanted to put myself out there and be like, no, I'm really a super nerd who loves vintage gear and analog gear, and I'm using these digital tools to make it. So
it brings me on to something I was going to ask you later, but you're very much not what I think I would expect from a Line 6 sound designer, in that when I think of Line 6, you know, I would think of the genres that have the initially really got hold of the Helix, which was, you know, a lot of sort of more tech metal genres. Certainly in general, digital amps is something that more technical music, you know, tech metal has kind of got hold of way more than other things. And, you know, I think of, you know, Billy Sheehan obviously has has signature presets. I'm like, oh yes, that makes sense for me. That's the sort of thing that I think of when I think of Line 6 products. But you're very much, you know, I mean, I want to talk about the valve amp that you built. You're very much a sort of a traditional sort of gear enthusiast in that sense, which is not necessarily what I would normally think of when thinking about digital gear.
Well, I mean, you know, it originally came from people who just, you know, were trying to replicate tube amps, and there were some, let's just say, metal centric people who were sound designers here before, and they did certain things and it was really good. But I have a very wide musical taste, and I've played in like bands that were like, you know, Cocteau Twins shoegaze ripoffs, and I've played in like very harsh noise rock bands. So I kind of think I want to be able to bring in a sounds for a wide variety of musicians. And, you know, we try to be let's just say you know, genre neutral when we're making the amps. If we do a good amp model, it will be like that amp. And if you were going to use Amp X for metal, or Amp X for stoner rock, or Amp X for, you know, southern blues, it would sound the same because that was the amp you would pick anyway.
Was that kind of the idea with the Helix? Were you trying to make sure, when you were picking what was going on there, were you trying to make sure there was something for every genre? Was that like part of the tick list?
Kind of. They wanted to just get a wide variety of amps. And then originally when we had the Helix, we had this methodology where it's like, it's warts and all. If an amp has some ugly artifacts that do funny things, and that's part of the amp, we're going to put that in the model. And some people might not like that, those artifacts, but that would actually be what happens in the real amp. So it's kind of like we're just trying to make them as accurate as possible. Since then, we've, you know, added amps like the Litigator, which is an idealized amp, and we've done a few more originals, and we, you know, we might not be as warts and all for the amp models as we used to be.
Right, I see. And of course, you know, it's worth talking about the amp that is based on your amp that you built. The Cartographer, which is named after your band as well, but is kind of has quickly become one of the most popular amps on the Helix. I mean, it's, you know, it's certainly kind of widely revered as being one of the best digital amps on there that you can play.
Yeah, I'm kind of flabbergasted, but I think it's awesome. So I play in a band called Cartographer. It's a very slow-moving band, especially since the other two members are still up in the San Francisco area, which is, you know, like a six-hour drive from L.A. And so I got this old Trainer amp, and it had been modded, and it didn't really work anymore. So I was just like, you know, I've built some project amps and stuff. I'm just going to make this head into, like, my idealized kind of high-gain Marshall-y head. So I just started making some mods to it, and I started using it in my band, and then I would do a little more like research and amp studying, and I'd say, oh, that's a neat little circuit trick there. I'll try it in my amp. So it was just kind of like this test platform that I would use to try out amp experiments. And I also used it in my band that was doing like loud rock music. So it was had to be very specialized. And I also was doing all the sounds with my EGC guitar, which is, you know, very full range. Yes. And has a certain, yes, a very distinctive sound. So I'm just like, okay, this amp just kind of works for me. And then I had it in the office a few years ago when I was doing another mod. I was like adding a resonance control. I'm like, I wonder if I can do that. So I put that in, and some people at work played it. I'm like, dude, you should model that. I'm like, really? I really think of this as a kind of difficult and strange amp. And they're like, no, just model it. I think it'll go well. So I did. And a bunch of people just picked right up on it. It was very gratifying.
Yeah. Yeah. Certainly you can find, you know, on forums, there are thank you posts to you for creating the Cartographer. But it really is a fantastic amp. And you're right in saying I think of it as being the quintessential Helix amp, in that it can kind of do a bit of everything. You can manipulate it so much in comparison to some of the other stuff that you know, it's incredibly flexible. It kind of almost, it has more flexibility than a lot of the other things that are limited by, you know, being designed to copy more specific things. I appreciate that it obviously is a real amp in real life, but it just seems to be very broad. It feels to me like I'm getting more access to what the Helix can do with the Cartographer.
Yeah, like in another band I play in, I use it as both my clean and dirty channel, and I just have assigned the positions of the knobs to change on a stomp switch. So it's like I hit one button and the gains go up and the master volume goes down, and it kind of is like there's a distortion, clean to distortion channel on it.
That's interesting. That's exactly what my guitarist Tim was doing with the Cartographer and the on the Helix on a on snapshot mode, just by having, you know, two individual switches assigned to either, you know, yes, a sort of clean or drive, so just a gain boosting, volume reducing.
Well, I like where Tim's going.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's very cool. Now, I'm kind of because on this podcast, obviously, you know, our listeners aren't, even though the Helix is incredibly popular, our listeners aren't all going to have Helix, so it's difficult to know kind of how in depth to go, because the thing about the Helix is it's not only that you keep on adding amp models and pedal models, but you also keep adding ways that you can use it. So I mentioned snapshot. That of course wasn't one of the original things that was introduced with Helix.
Yeah.
Initially, so I guess listeners, if you're not familiar, if you don't own a Helix, you won't know what I mean by snapshot. Mark, I assume you don't know what I'm talking about.
You've talked about it enough in the past that I've got a vague idea of what it is.
Right. So generally speaking, you know, I think when you're using an amp modeler or, you know, a multi effects of this sort, you'd either have like a stomp mode where you're controlling individual pedals the way you would if you had them on a board. Or you have like a preset mode where you're flicking, you know, between whatever, six different complete board and amp configurations that you've built, right? But snapshot was introduced by Helix, it was like a totally different thing, because the problem that all switches have is if you're using your preset mode and you're switching from one to another, it's also using an awful lot of DSP to you know, to completely change every pedal and amp that is set up and reload them in a different order. So there's going to be like a tiny little delay when you're switching between them. So Line 6 introduced snapshot mode, which allowed you to build a board and amp rig, but then assign all of the pedals to essentially turn multiples or individuals on and off, and also to be able to control any rotaries on any of those pedals or amps via the buttons. So essentially you build one board, but then you use the Helix as a controller for that board.
Yeah, I think, like, imagine if you'd built like a...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Pedal board and amp rig in the real world, and then with one button you could change which effects were on and off in any of the knob and amp knob or pedal knob positions and such. So it's just a way to quickly jump between any one possible sound within one preset and any other possible sound within the same preset.
Yeah, exactly, which is ridiculous. And then kind of, I don't know if it was around that time, but you also introduced an actual synthesizer, like a foot synthesizer.
Oh yeah. that was one of those crazy things that just happened. We're in a meeting and, you know, we have the little like guitar synth where you can, it's like a mono synth where you can like play guitar and it detects the pitch and puts out the note. But I was like, there's an oscillator in our software tools that's for that. I bet I could just have something. I just wanted to call it the drones, and you would just be able to like hit a button, because I don't know if you've ever listened to like Spaceman 3 or something, but they had one of those Vox guitars with the built-in E drone tuner, and they would just leave it on as a drone throughout the song and then play guitar over it. So I was like, I wanted to do something like that, where you could just hit a button and it would just drone some note or sound.
Oh, and it was... carry on.
So anyway, I just ran down to my office, and within a few hours, I'd made up the first version of it. And there's two versions in, one that you pick the note, and one that you can just pick a frequency. And it's, and then I realized with the momentary switches, you can kind of play it like the Moog Taurus bass pedals.
Yeah, well, exactly. This was the best thing about this, because when I realized it was on the Helix, I was like, oh, I've been thinking about buying one of those Nord pedal organs for years, and I was like, oh, I actually kind of have this here, I can probably build that, because again, like using snapshot mode, certainly I found it way easier using the note one that you've got there. It's a four note harmony, I think.
Yeah, I think
four note harmony. Yeah,
three.
So you can pick those, build your chord, and assign those to individual foot switches using snapshot mode, and then obviously if you name those foot switches the appropriate chord that it is, then you then have yourself a foot organ, which of course, provided because it doesn't take up a world of DSP, so provided you've not got too complicated a rig, you can also have, you know, you could send that going out to straight to front of house if you want, and have your ordinary guitar rig completely unaffected, giving you essentially a bass synth on the floor, which was just a ridiculous thing. So that was like an accident build that already existed.
Yeah, I'm still trying to get over the term foot organ. That's pretty awesome. And two, it was just one of those things where it's like, oh, we already have it in here, and you know, within, you know, like maybe a day and a half of work, I had built both of those models, and you know, we tested them out, and we're like, okay, this is fun. It was just kind of like sometimes you get a crazy idea. And it's like, oh, you can just make an effect and put it in there, and it works out right. The multi-pass delay was like that, where I just was sitting in a meeting and just thinking about a delay. I'm like, oh, what happens if we could have the repeats filtered by frequency? Take a multi-tap delay and then filter each of so the repeats come back, but only in a certain frequency band. And then so I ran down to my office after the meeting, and by the end of the day, I had the first version of it built to play to people. And just it's really awesome just to be able to do that on a whim.
Yeah, that's amazing. And that seems to be the thing about Helix, that it's so free that you seem to, because you've got creative minds like yourself there, because the basis of Helix is so limitless, you seem to keep being able to come up with interesting things, and that comes right down to sort of the application of Helix. You know, I think I was watching something you were on like a few months ago, and you were assigning the looper through the expression pedal, so you could build a loop, but then you could bring it in and out via the volume pedal, essentially, whilst retaining your guitar signal over the top.
Yeah, right? I think so. Yeah. I mean, one of the things I do is, like, if I play, like, you know, solo ambient, I'm sensitive, looper guitar, I have the looper going, and I assign one of the expression pedals to be the volume of the looper. And then I have another one that might be the, like, feedback of the delay. But I can actually start recording and do looping stuff, but just keep the volume down, and unknowing to people who are listening, if you know, rarely there are, but usually, you know, I'm actually starting to loop stuff, and then I'll fade it up with the expression pedal, and there'll be a loop there. I'll have no idea what it sounds like, because it's just kind of been going on behind the scenes.
Right.
But if you play,
amazing.
You know, and, yeah. But there's,
I think,
yeah.
I was going to say, I think it speaks to what you're doing, but also just thinking about how we've moved on from something like, you know, the HD pods, where not only are you bringing in new sounds, but the ability via, you know, patching the units to bring in new features. I think that's the greatest strength with Helix, but also more newer modeling in general. And it seems that you're kind of excited about that. You know, for example, you know, when you came to the company with the 500 HDs, you wouldn't necessarily have been able to do that, because people wouldn't have been connecting them up in the same way that they are with something like the Helix.
When I started working here, I had an M9 on my pedal board, and I was doing very specific.
Who didn't?
Well, I was doing very specific things with the delay and the looper. And it was almost like an artifact. Like there's a thing with the non-modeled delays, just like the regular digital delays. If you go to 100%, it just starts cycling like sound on sound, but it doesn't go out of control. And if you have the trails on the delay, you can turn it off and kind of use it as a second looper. So I was doing all this crazy stuff with the M9. So when I started working at Line 6, I came in and a lot of people were like, oh, we never expected anyone to do that with the M9. Like, so I had to make sure that all of those accidents made it into the Helix because I wanted to be able to use it in the same way. So, and I mean, it's not just me. There's, you know, people who write the firmware. There's Eric Klein, who is like kind of the whole architectural mind behind putting the Helix together and the functionality and stuff. And, you know, it's not just, I just kind of get to make the sounds and develop effects, but there's really a whole lot of people behind the scenes who are maybe not so out there on the forums and the internet as me who are doing just as cool stuff.
In terms of like new features and thinking about what you're going to bring in next, whether it be, you know, a new amp model or whether it's a whole new feature like snapshot or, you know, the synth stuff, how much do you kind of look at the community and how much do you take that on board and say, you know, people are kind of crying out for this feature, this needs to be bumped up in the list of things that we can do, or how much of it is, you know, we've kind of got this roadmap, we think these things would be great and let's push it out there and see what the community can do with the stuff that we've got in mind?
I'd say it's probably like the product owner is probably like maybe 80% listening to what people want, and then the last 20% is trying to come up with something that's going to like be something that no one has ever done before, or at least is an implementation that can maybe make something really easy that would otherwise be very difficult.
I guess the advantage you've got from that perspective is you know what tools are available to you, whereas the community doesn't necessarily know that. They might want something that is just not going to be possible, and vice versa, you might know that you've got something stashed away that you think is going to bring a great feature to the platform.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, people's like, oh, there's a microphone input on there. And, you know, there's some other stuff. You should be able to make a vocoder really easily. And I'm like, the way it works behind the scenes, it's not so easy, but we're still trying to figure out ways to do that. We'd love to be able to do that, but it's, you know, but there are other things where, like, you know, doing a crazy delay where I filter like six multiple tapped repeats was actually really easy to do with the tools that I don't think anyone is asking for that, but I just went ahead and did it because I could.
No, yeah, I definitely was asking for that. That's thank you very much. So actually, I guess talking about that, you know, what are your favorite things that you've brought to the Helix, you know, amp models and effects wise?
I mean, to me, it's really silly because I get to model my own gear that I built. So it's really awesome that, you know, like I said, the cartographer came and I modeled my own amp. I have a Fender Pro Reverb from the 60s that I really love, that I'd love to get modeled sometime. The Adriatic delay, which was actually not named by me, but it was based on my Boss DM2 that I love, but I wish that had a few more features, so I added modulation to it. I added the ability to actually put in more virtual bucket brigade chips and get a longer delay time, but still have the tone stay the same.
That's a fantastic thing to get to do. I didn't think about that, but you, I guess you get to make the mods that everyone wishes they have, because you're absolutely right. You know, the DM2, a fantastic, one of the best sounding analog delays, and the Adriatic is a fantastic delay on the Helix. But yeah, absolutely. Of course I want that from my DM2. I would love to be able to control modulation, and I would love to be able to get those longer delay times as well. So, like, what a great addition.
Yeah, I was just, I mean, I've used and loved the DM2 since like the late 90s, so it was nice to be able to take it and get, you know, get the same sound and then add all the features I would want to put in. Like, I did the Space Echo, Cosmos Echo. I did that model, and that was like a month and a half long deep dive into Space Echo circuits, but I really love it. I always was a fan. I don't know how I would actually use it in my own band, because I just tend to get like clouds of mushy sound with it, but but it's, I absolutely loved doing that model. It was super fun.
Yeah. Is there anything that you, and actually across the history of the company, is there anything that you haven't been able to get your hands on in the kind of Line 6 vault, as it were, to be able to model it?
Well, I mean, of course, everyone wants a real Dumble, and we sure. haven't been able to borrow one. We had a line on one, and then the person realized I was going to have to take the amplifier chassis out of the amp to do the modeling, and then
nice.
They were like, "Nope, we don't. I don't even want you to do that." I'm like, "But a repair person would have to do that," and like, "Nope, don't want to do that." So that didn't work out. And I feel like I don't know. I think if we look hard enough. We can either buy or borrow rare gear. So we've been pretty lucky to be able to find things.
Yeah, nothing stands out to me as like not available. The only pedal that I kind of want out of a modeler, just because they're so hard to get a hold of and they've become very expensive now, is the Digitech XP300 Space Station.
Oh, yeah, that's great. I love those. The yellow one.
Crazy pedal that... there's not really many uses for, but it kind of feels like something that would get picked up in a modeler and suddenly everyone would be using those sounds.
Wait, I don't know what pedal you're talking about. Which one was the space station?
It's hard to describe what it even does. Go and look at a YouTube video, you'll see.
Oh, okay.
Digitech
okay.
came out with four pedals that were kind of like a whammy something. One was a reverb and one was called the space station. It was like either combinations of delay, pitch, and reverb or like ring modulators. It was like super pretty or super ugly.
Yeah.
It was a crazy pedal.
All over the place. The other one was a modulation pedal.
Oh, yeah,
I think,
that's right.
Was the other one.
And there are people who like will burn the ROM chips where you can send them one and they'll burn a ROM chip that has all four pedals on it. So you can just do a switch and switch between them.
Yeah, they all run on the same hardware. So there's like a bootleg version called the XP1000, I think, which is kind of the bootleg that combines all of the pedals, which is a neat thing. But yeah, it'd be cool to be able to, you know, put that into the mix with some other modeling stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's what I want. That's definitely what I want. That sounds like exactly what I want. Ben, I also wanted to talk about your guitars because you play an electrical guitar company guitar. Which is wonderful. Like so for listeners who might not have come across the brand, you should have listeners. I've definitely spoken about them, but why don't you tell us about your wonderful guitar?
Well, Electrical Guitar Company is a company run by this guy named Kevin Burkett, and it was out of Florida. Now it's down in Alabama, I think. But he kind of was influenced and inspired by Travis Bean guitars and Valeno guitars, which were two 70s aluminum necked guitar companies. And so he started like building these guitars that have aluminum necks. Some of them have aluminum bodies, some of them have wood bodies, but the thing that's awesome is that the neck goes all the way from the headstock to where the bridge mounts. And then the pickups, so the bridge, the pickups, and the tuning pegs are all on the same like solid piece of aluminum that was CNC machined. And
they're mounted into the rear pan, aren't they? So the whole rear pan of the guitar is all one, like with the second series of Travis Beans. Yeah. That was the second series of Travis Beans where it was all the pickups were all mounted into that rear pan. I thought all the electrical guitar companies were in the same thing, so it was all one body. Is that the case with yours?
Well, mine has a wooden body, so there's just like if you can take the body off and then it looks like some crazy Devo guitar or something where it's just like a 2x4. And then the aluminum guitars that Kevin makes for EGC are kind of like clamshells where there's a front and a back and then the neck goes through and the neck bolts into the back. But then there are the certain Travis Beans that were the whole pan, back, and neck are the same piece of aluminum. They're all very different. And I tell people it's kind of like a subtractive synthesis where you get the super full frequency because since the bridge and the tuning pegs are on the same piece of aluminum, nothing is resonating to take the energy away from the strings. So you get this very wide frequency response. And if you want to make the guitar sound a certain way, you kind of have to remove what you don't want rather than add what you do want.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. And is that your only aluminum necked guitar? Have you always bought Travis Beans and no.
I always wanted an aluminum neck guitar, but I was kind of a fan of like, you know, the band Shellac and then other, you know, Chicago noisy rock bands. And I kind of felt if I got one, like it would be too obvious. Like, my first guitar is a Japanese Telecaster. So I've had a soft spot and love for Telecasters throughout the years. But finally, I gave in and I got to know Kevin and we're pretty good friends now. And so I got this guitar. I actually got a matching bass to go with it. So I have a matching guitar and bass set that are the EGC guitars.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, that's very cool indeed.
I'll post a photo to the Guitar Nerds group. Oh, I think they would like that.
Yes, yeah. Please do. Please do. I'm still teetering on the edge of getting an aluminium necked guitar. I need to commit to it. There's just they're always such an expensive kind of instrument. It's such a premium thing to move into for something that if you've not played an aluminium necked guitar before, you know, it's very different to not be able to do it at an accessible price point before you go sort of whole hog, I guess.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to be able to play a few. Like when my band was on tour, we stayed with a friend in Chicago who had a couple of them. So I played them. I'm like, okay, I think I just have to get one. And, you know, if the worst case scenario came and I hated it, I could probably sell it for close to what I paid for it. So it wasn't actually too much of a risk.
That's the thing. They don't really depreciate in value. Well, yes. I mean, I could definitely hear the Steve Albini, well, the shellac influence in Cartographer. You know, of course, Shellac are one of the best bands in the world, so that's a fantastic thing to be influenced by.
Oh yeah, no, they're sweethearts, and they're a very unique take on performing and making music. I absolutely love and adore those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I think we're pretty much coming up to time on this episode. Mark, I hope I haven't left out any things that you wanted to include.
No, I think we covered everything. Yeah, like I said, just kind of my thing, whenever I speak to anyone, Line 6 is like, I just want to see the vault. I want to see all the amps and all the pedals and stuff that are being used for the modeling and being used as a reference. I've always been super interested in that since the first amps were available. So, yeah, sometime let's get into the vault. Let's have a look around. That's what I want to do.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know. Yeah. Los Angeles is, you come here for work, so, you know, swing on by.
Yeah, we'll see what we can do.
Yeah, we definitely should. Well, thank you so much for coming on to the Friday Specials, Ben. It's been really great to talk to you, you know, especially about the Helix stuff. And for our listeners, I hope this has been, it was tricky because I didn't want to go into too much depth about the Helix. I didn't want to go into the sort of nitty gritty for people who don't own a Helix, but.
We talked about the foot synth. That's in depth enough, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I think, I mean, if
foot
there was...
Organ.
The foot organ. Yeah, sorry.
I tell you what, if in the next update, it is not renamed the foot organ, I will be very disappointed. But
I think maybe I'll do one for Joe called the Huggable Drive.
Yes.
I'm never, ever going to live that down.
That was amazing.
Yeah. It's so obvious now, retrospectively. Damn,
I'm just going to start. I'm going to start Ron Burgundying all of the emails now, and just like mix up some words, and you will have to read them out.
Oh, it's. I didn't realize that. It's a real Ron Burgundy moment. Oh.
That's great. Well, thank you very much for having me. I love the show, and I'm happy to come on whenever you need me. So,
thank you so much, Ben. But yeah, you can of course. Catch more Guitar Nerds over on our Patreon at patreon.com/guitar nerds, or you can join us on any of the major social platforms with @guitar nerds, and we'll be back next week with our regular episode on Wednesday and another Friday special on Friday. Oh, we'll catch you next week for more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Bye bye.
Cheers, gang.